Good afternoon. Well, as you just heard, you are listening to KDNK. I'm Marilyn Gleason, and we're going to have a couple of great guests for the next half hour in the KDNK studios. I've got Gwen Garcelon sitting here with me, and on the phone we have Don Hall. Don Hall is going to be presenting some events, I guess, this Friday and Saturday here in Carbondale. He's coming to the 3rd Street Center on Friday, and there's going to be some kind of workshop and practicum and hands-on activity going on Saturday, all focused on great ideas. And regeneration is the name behind it all. Don has written a book lately called The Regeneration Handbook, and we'll be talking about that too. So I would like to welcome Gwen Garcelon. Hi.
Hi, Marilyn.
Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah.
And on the phone, I presume we have Don. Are you there, Don?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hello.
Glad to be here.
Coming in loud and clear to the mothership. Don lives down in you're coming up from Boulder, right?
That's right.
Well, the first question I have for you, Don, well, I'll back up a little bit. We've got the book. It's The Regeneration Handbook, and this event is being sponsored by a couple of local people. Rita Marsh with the Center for Human Flourishing is bringing you into town, and Gwen Garcelon also with her interest in local food and sustainability and those kinds of matters. The first question I really had for you, Don, is about that word regeneration, which is honestly kind of a new term to me. I don't really know what it means. So what is it, and why do we need a new word?
Yeah, great question. this particular usage of the word regeneration really came out of regenerative agriculture, which was that word started to be used to go beyond sustainable agriculture, even beyond local agriculture, to something that actually enhances the ecology of the place while providing sustenance for people. So here and in the Regeneration Handbook, I'm applying it to our world writ large. Ecosystem regeneration, the regeneration of our local economies, our food systems, our energy systems, but also regeneration of our social and political life, and regeneration of ourselves as individuals. You know, what it speaks to me beyond words like sustainability or environmentalism or local is that we don't have to settle for only doing less bad. I think that's sometimes how the word sustainability has been interpreted. Lessening our environmental footprint, but actually we as humans have the ability to really do good in this world, to enhance this world for ourselves, for our communities, and for the more than human world, the general ecology.
You maybe started your path and at the Naropa Institute in Boulder, I guess it's Naropa University these days, and you've also studied at the Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute right here in our Roaring Fork Valley with Jerome Osentowski, who a lot of people around here know pretty well. Can you talk a little bit about the influence of Naropa and especially of the Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute on your work? You know, what did you learn there, and how did it bring you to where you are today? And I'm going to ask you to speak very directly into your phone. Not your fault, but we have a soundboard that's starting to go south on us. So the louder you can be on your end, the better people are going to hear you.
Okay, hopefully this is clear. Yeah, I mean, they both had a huge impact on my development as an environmental leader. I had gotten involved first in political activism when I was in college with the Students for Free Tibet, with anti-war and anti-globalization movements, but gradually became more and more disenchanted with that kind of activism. I mean, I think it's still very necessary, but there was something missing for me, which was, I didn't know exactly what it was at the time, but I've come to understand that it's a positive orientation towards creating solutions and alternative structures and systems. And yeah, I think Naropa really gave me the confidence to be a leader, to step out on my own and try to make a change in a different way. Permaculture, in addition to giving me, you know, a set of tools and skills, principles and processes for regenerating landscapes. And I've worked as an organic farmer, grown gardens and food forests ever since, but also translating the principles of permaculture that are really rooted in how nature works, how change actually happens, how sustainable systems are created in nature, and applying that to kind of a larger social realm and to the, you know, climate crisis and sustainability crisis.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the first principle of permaculture is observe and interact. So we don't go in with our solutions already pre-formulated, but we actually look at, you know, whether we're, you know, looking at our own backyards to start a garden, or we're looking at a whole community. You know, we're really observing, you know, what are the needs here? What are the resources? What are the opportunities? What are people excited about? What are people worried about? And start from there, meeting people where they're at, and kind of gradually building up more kind of health and empowerment system over time, rather than coming in saying, we have all the answers, one-size-fits-all solutions, and trying to convince people to adopt them.
As I mentioned, Gwen Garcelon is in the studio, too. And I just wanted to ask you, Gwen, what do you have, you know, what's your comments, and how are you coming at this event that's coming up?
I think that was a beautiful segue from what Don just mentioned about that principle of permaculture to observe and engage. And that's really what this event is about, to gather people together to understand the whole arena of regeneration, what that can mean for a community, what we need to have on our radar for the kind of future that we're facing from climate impacts and so many other impacts, and hear from people what's on their mind, what they see as opportunities, what they've been involved in. There's so many great efforts that have been going on in the town. The friend Hannah Hunt, who's the chair of the environmental board for the town, will be there. And the environmental board has started an effort called Be Friendly, it has to do with pollinators.
I was going to say honeybees.
Yes.
One of my favorite creatures.
Exactly. And you know, looking at how we can transition more of our townlands and our private lands to pollinator-friendly areas. That's something that we really need to think about so that our lands can be healthy. Our integrated weed management plan that was adopted, that the Parks and Rec Department has been using on town parks for a few years now. Those are all beautiful efforts that are regenerative. And I think we need a better understanding of why those are important and how we need to care for our ecosystems so that they'll support us through these challenging times.
Before we go any further, I have to ask, and both of you can answer, what does food have to do with all this?
I can let Don talk about that because he has a lot of experience with the transition movement, which is the movement to transition from peak oil. So what communities will have to look like in a future without that as the focus of our economy. And a lot of the starting place is around local food. So, Don, I'll let you talk about how, you know, you started Transition Sarasota and why local food is really at the heart of a lot of this.
Yeah, because food seems, in a way, pretty mundane and everyday. And we're talking about some pretty big ideas here.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, food is, in a lot of ways, the foundation of human culture and human economy. As I think most of us know, we have an incredibly industrialized global food system that wrecks economies, decreases biodiversity, creates a lot of greenhouse gas emissions, soil erosion. And it's something that we really have an answer to. We know ways to grow our food locally, sustainably, ecologically, in a way that regenerates the soil, that increases biodiversity, and that is healthier, brings people together, strengthens the local economy, and uses much less energy and actually sequesters carbon. So, you know, the simplest solutions are sometimes the best. And I think that, you know, food is a great place to start, which is, you know, part of the reason why we started with food with Transition Sarasota. You know, we started off doing a lot of educational programs and what we call reskilling workshops, teaching people how to grow and preserve their food. And then our first major practical project is called the Suncoast Gleaning Project. And continues to run today, 14 years later. We've donated over 500,000 pounds of local produce from local farms to local food banks to benefit the food insecure in our community. And we also started an annual Eat Local Week and a Eat Local Resource Guide and Directory to really pull together all the different threads, all the community gardens and the farms and the farmers markets and so forth. And, make it easier for people to eat locally and really show a movement towards local food in a big way in Sarasota, Florida.
We have a lot of farmers markets in the summertime running throughout our area, too. Pretty much every town has its own farmers market. But when we talk about, you know, the factory kind of method, the way that we produce and distribute food today also leads to a lot of insecurity. There was a time a number of years ago when some disaster happened on I-70, and it was during a really busy week. I think it was during the Christmas week. And within a couple of days, because the supply from the Front Range was interrupted, I mean, they ran out of food in the grocery store in Aspen, essentially. There was just about nothing left on the shelves.
They say we have about 3 days worth of food in the grocery stores if the trucks stop rolling. And, you know, there's lots of different scenarios that we could think of where that actually might happen. And the thing is, we can't wait for that to happen. It takes a lot of time to train new farmers and bring back long-abused and degraded lands to make them productive in an organic way. So this is something that we really, need to be doing now and yesterday.
So what are transition towns?
Yeah, so the transition movement started in 2005 in England. It was started by a permaculture teacher named Rob Hopkins, and the basic idea was to start a movement to transition their little town of Totnes, England, beyond fossil fuels to a sustainable, resilient, and regenerative future. And they had tremendous success. There was a lot of energy around this. They did a lot of work around local food, but also their local economy, creating an alternative currency, a local currency called the Totnes Pound. They worked on energy issues, created a local community-owned energy company, really brought together people from all different parts of the community around this idea. And it was so successful that other nearby towns and cities started copying the approach. And then Rob wrote a book called The Transition Handbook. And from there, it spread around the world. And now there are about 1,000 different transition initiatives in 50 countries. And every one of them is a little bit different. It's really encouraged that transition is responsive to the unique needs and opportunities and resources and culture of that place. But there's also kind of a general organizing philosophy and some principles that all of these initiatives hold in common. But basically, you know, they're trying to build a movement for change that's big enough to matter, that can actually, you know, change the story that community tells about itself and where it's going, and to really safeguard its future, to adapt to our changing times.
So there's a book, The Regeneration Handbook. What will people learn in the book?
Well, there's a lot in there. I really meant it to be a handbook, a kind of guidebook for existing and aspiring change makers. So it's full of different tools and stories, practices and resources, insights, really looking at all the different aspects of change making. I think one thing that's very unique about the transition movement is how holistic it is. It's not just looking at the, you know, the big, obvious, practical projects that we can do, but also recognizing that the success of those practical projects are built on our understanding, first, of what the issues that we're facing. Having a compelling, realistic, but inspiring vision for the future, to work on ourselves. We have this aspect of the transition movement called the inner transition that looks at, you know, who do we need to be to embody this change, and how can we help others through a process of transformation.
Quinn, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I mean, something that I love about the book is that it is process-oriented, and that's something that I've realized over the years is so very important. It's almost always the human element, our ability to create good process or to create good collaboration, that makes things either work or not. There are so many projects that get taken on that get derailed by not having a sound container to really hold the project. And I think those are some of the really important elements of the book and of what we'll be talking about at the events on Friday and Saturday.
Is Carbondale a transition town, Gwen?
You know, I think at its heart it is. There are so many projects and efforts that you can point to that are part of transition type of efforts. But there's just not a concerted agreement, maybe, that that's what we are. And maybe it's time for that. Maybe that's something that will come out of the dialogues on Friday and Saturday.
Let's talk a little bit about what is coming up this weekend. There is an event on Friday from 7 to 9 p.m., a talk and community discussion at the Third Street Center.
Right. So Don will be giving presentation about his book and some of the principles that are in that. We'll also have some time to break out into small discussion groups and gather people's feedback, thoughts about, should Carbondale be a transition town? Is it already? You know, maybe some of that will come out of those dialogues. And then on Saturday, we're going to focus on what has been done, community planning efforts that have happened around the nature park and some of the other town lands, how important that is to making sure our town lands are healthy and that they'll be ready should we need to start food production in a bigger way, which I think those of us who are looking at how trends are going with the climate, we know that that's something coming our way, that we really are going to need to have a lot more food production locally.
Do we or do we not have a community garden in Carbondale?
We have three. But they, there's also, you know, the one at the Orchard Church has a lot more space available for people to come and start learning how to grow food. And a community garden is such a great place to start and to learn because you have so much support.
And is it going to be an outdoor expedition on Saturday? Or?
We'll start inside, but hopefully we'll have a chance, depending on the weather. It looks like it's going to be fine, to go and look at some of what's been done, something of what's possible there, and to give people a better understanding of what we have at our disposal.
Don, what do you want to show people on Saturday?
Well, I think I'm mainly there to listen on Saturday and to be of what help I can in Carbondale, thinking towards, you know, how do we become a more regenerative community. I think on Friday night, my job is a little bit to be a catalyst, a provocateur, to throw some thoughts out there and get people talking and see what emerges from that. And yeah, I think, you know, one of the topics that I think can't be avoided at the moment, the big elephant in the room, is the election and what does this mean for our country, but more specifically for these kind of regenerative efforts.
Well, let me jump in for a second because this is my last question. You sort of led me right there. You know, people who are concerned about the climate, the environment, wholeness, unity, some of the principles that you're talking about are pretty demoralized after this election. So how do your ideals apply in this moment?
Well, I certainly think that there's going to be a shift, there's going to be a need for a lot more political action, mutual aid, protest, and things like that, and I will be right there. but I think that we can't give up on this kind of more lofty, long-term vision of regeneration. And actually, I think we need to double down on it during this time because, you know, this is much bigger than the next 4 years. You know, we have a planet that is in crisis. And in some respects, I think the rise of Donald Trump is a symptom of these larger changes, this kind of uncertainty and chaos that we see increasingly in our world. Mm. And these changes take time, so we need to keep moving forward on them. And I think also they're a place where we can still make some real progress at the local and community levels. It may be very difficult to make any progress on climate over the next 4 years with the Trump administration.
I'm gonna turn for a second here to Gwen. We are very short on time here. Gwen, okay. Tell us a little bit about the Center for Human Flourishing.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to the Center for Human Flourishing because that's the organization that Rita Marsh founded several years ago, really has been working so much on that inner transition that Don mentioned, the inner tools that we'll need to be personally resilient. And Rita has had you know, that same awareness that I've had as a regenerative strategist to focus on local food. And we both have been part of a bioregional learning group for a couple of years now. And that sort of really spurred the idea to bring Don to town. So I thank Rita for being my partner in that.
Okay. That was Gwen Garcelon. And on the phone, we've been talking to Don Hall. He'll be here in Carbondale coming up on Friday at the Third Street Center. Thank you both very much.
Thanks for having us.